staff for helping get us set up, here. And thank you, we are in session on the floor, and you are as well, so.
Not yet.
Oh, not yet, okay, well, we're in the middle, so it took us a little bit of organizing to get off the floor.
So we'll move this right along.
Yes, so Katie, or does somebody want to walk us through the side-by-side or talk to us about the major differences?
Sure, Senator. Members, there are three differences in the two bills. The first is the application of the bill and where, what this applies to. The Senate has it only applying to the Board of Chiropractor and chiropractic and to chiropractors. The House applies this restriction to all health-related licensing board occupations. The second difference is in the definition of conviction. The House includes plea of guilty in their definition, and the Senate has removed plea of guilty. And the third difference is in the effective date. The Senate has a day following final enactment, and the House has an effective date of August 1st.
Okay, well, should we start with the easiest one first? Let's just go with the date of enactment. I think that's the easiest thing to talk about here first.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Representative Abler, thank you for joining us. We just started.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I guess I would just speak in favor of the House position, actually, of having a date certain. It seems to me that when you're wanting to give notice to people, they don't always know when day of enactment is, but having a date certain makes it clear.
That's fine with me. Representative Perry? Okay, all right. So we'll go with August 1st. Okay, I'm backing up. Let's talk about who it applies to. The Senate version, of course, is just to the Board of Chiropractic. This, as we know, stemmed from an incident in the newspapers that brought it to attention of the legislature. The Board of Chiropractic, of course, is supportive of this, and you've expanded it to other professions. So why don't you just talk to us a little bit about what your thinking was with that, and we'll talk about
Great. And there's actually Representative Adler who amended, and then I'll talk about the steps that I took to vet that with the other groups. So you
go ahead. All right, thanks. Yeah, I'm sorry. The matter came up, and the chiropractic community was surprised that they couldn't pull this person's ticket with all that went on in the paper. And so, as a profession, there's no interest in coddling sex offenders. So. And it turned out upon our review that only the Board of Medical Practice had a law that did anything about this at all. And so the thinking was, using the Board of Medical Practice as the template to expand that to the chiropractic board was the bill you had, and then, oh man,
right.
Over here. I should be in better shape, I guess. But to also not wait for somebody else to infract, who's a social worker or a nurse or whoever, because of the high trust that they also enjoy. And to just get it done as a categorical thing. And in that, my question has been to staff and to other people, is this good language that's clean, that would make it something that we could use as a template for everybody? When I've mentioned in the hallways that only the Board of Medical Practice had this protection for their patients, they're like, really? So, and when we brought it up, we brought it up in the licensing subcommittee, and then we can talk about the rest, but it was very widely accepted that was a good idea. So that's a short version.
What I did 5 weeks ago, on March 23rd, so tomorrow, actually, exactly 5 weeks, I wrote to the other healthcare provider associations licensed under Chapter 214, Sub 2, to let them know, and the form letter that went to all of them saying, As you likely know, I'm sponsoring legislation, House File 634, that would require automatic license or credential revocation for any healthcare provider who is convicted of a felony level sexual assault. You are receiving this letter because your profession will come under this new law that is enacted as presently written. I want to ensure that all affected organizations have been notified because the bill is moving to the legislative process rather rapidly. If for any reason your professional association objects to this, it is important that you notify me immediately. In that 5 weeks, not a single organization has notified me. You know, no objections whatsoever. I did get a single email from a social worker who was not speaking on behalf of his organization, but only personally, with one single anecdotal incident that I found non-compelling. But I invited him to contact all the conferees, let them know who's on the conference committee. I don't know if any of you heard from him or not. I couldn't find my email, but it had to do with some young man who's a social worker now. No, in fact, he was a social worker. As a young social worker, he was working with juvenile delinquents, and his felony level sexual assault had been a 14-year-old boy under his care. I just thought to myself, that's sort of exactly who we're after here. That's not compelling. How? Oh, and then he said, in the past 10 years, there are no incidences that I'm aware of. I thought, that you're aware of. Well, that was the gist, and I don't know if he contacted you. So, as I said, 5 weeks have gone by. I haven't heard any objections.
Okay, so you, Representative Jackson, just to clarify, put out an email letter to the other licensing board?
Snail mail.
Okay, and did they respond back, or did they not respond back, or you didn't get any negative responses?
I got no response whatsoever from any of them. I got a single email.
Okay. So they didn't respond back at all?
Correct.
Questions or comments?
Madam Chair, yes. The Board of Nursing, if you want to. Social work, I'm sorry.
At some point we'll call the other witnesses. One of the things related to, and I have had discussions about expanding it to the other boards. I didn't know that we would do it this year and at this point, but to your point, Representative Engler, if it's a good template, a good bill, then maybe it's a time to expand it. On the Senate side, we had quite a bit of floor discussion to get our bill passed. And the thought was, and maybe related to your social worker's story, there were lots of stories brought up, anecdotal what-ifs, in trying to make sure that this is going to be a fully vetted thing and it does apply, having to do with the law as it stands right now. You have an underage young couple engaged in a sexual relationship. He turns 18, she's still younger. He's going to be a sex offender if the parents or someone decides to prosecute. And in the context of a consensual, loving relationship, he's going to now be excluding himself from being an RN, a physical therapist, and everything else. And we were struggling with that on the floor in terms of, at some point, I think the legislature has to filter out some of these sorts of things. So that's why I think we went to the plea of guilty, adding that in and saying, they took out the plea of guilty because you may be able to sidestep some of these cases where it's just an administrative thing. It's not really felony level sexual assault. So I know when we go back, we're going to have a struggle with this, I think, in the Senate. Mary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, thinking about this as a lawyer who used to be involved in these kinds of criminal cases, now this is, it's very difficult to get a handle on these situations because when you try to broadly define things that are different, then, you know, how it's just hard to figure out exactly the right way to get at what your concern is. And I don't know if procedurally it's as much about how someone pleads or not, because you wouldn't want someone to be able to control the outcome with regard to them based on whether they go to a jury or whether they plead guilty. Because what we're really concerned about is predatory behavior versus more non-predatory kinds of things. And I don't think we wanted to suggest that things that are in the law are okay. I mean, things that we've criminalized within the law, like someone who's quite a bit older having a relationship with someone quite a bit younger, we're not intending to say that we want to just sanction that kind of behavior, although we did have some discussion about what's the appropriate age limit to really, you know, criminalize this, and I think Senator Dill is the one who's got some strong feelings about that because of a case in his district. But what we really want to try to protect is people from being victimized, especially where, as Representative Abler said, you've got this trusting relationship, and people who deliberately are seeking sometimes these positions in order to have the upper hand with people they can victimize. And certainly that can happen across the board, whether it's a chiropractor, a doctor, you know, we've had situations like that with people in the ministry, you know, where we've especially wanted to be protective of someone not taking advantage of those situations. And so that, to me, is a little bit the struggle of wanting to fulfill that goal and be clear about our desire to not allow people to go back in any who are predatory like that and ever get back in a situation to do that again, and yet at the same time not take someone who we wouldn't put in that predatory count, what we used to call way back in the military, trying to separate the pedophiles or the predatory people from what they called the situational offenders, who, because they were not doing something that was all right, but in a situation in their life, whether because of chemical abuse or whatever, that they weren't likely, what if they got that problem fixed, to go out and be a threat again. And I'm not sure how you get at that, but that's the kind of view that I think about when I look at these things.
Madam Chair, we have that. We were having that discussion before you about the net being a little too broad, because I, in fact, have a constituent right now who is being charged with first-degree criminal sex and for an incident from 2 years ago, and he's now engaged to his victim, whose family doesn't even want to prosecute it, but it had to do with country school, grades 7 through 12, being 3 years and 1 month apart. And because technically speaking, he could be convicted. He might even plead, because technically, and you're right, those aren't the people. And I'd love to have the discussion about how to differentiate those and how to allow a reapplication instead of closing the door forever, because I think that the licensing boards want to tell the difference. We don't want to keep the situationals from having these professions. At the same time, we want to protect the public, because you're right, this is a special category of healthcare providers where there's physical or emotional intimacy and trust.
So these are some of the things on the Senate side we're struggling with, is those subtle things. And I have some resistance to going to all health boards at this point, because we haven't had an opportunity for the nurses and the PTs and everybody else to come before the committees and testify about what those differences may be or may not be. And it may turn out that with some additional discussion, if we were to bring a bill next year related to the rest of the boards, that we'd be able to get all the licensing boards here, we'd be able to get professionals here and talk about that. I typically don't like to have black or white solutions either. You know, we just slam the door knowing you can never, ever be a chiropractor again, because we also heard testimony of or I got an email actually of a chiropractor who 15 years ago had been convicted, and he's still practicing today but under constant supervision. And he has to pay for that additional supervisory person in his office, and she reports and stuff like that. So, and it's, and so that's an exception to the rule. I don't know that I'm ready this year to go the full distance to all boards. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I happen to be from an area in Bemidji where, I don't know if anyone remembers, but this was in the papers. I can't remember how many years ago it was now, but there was a gentleman convicted where it was clearly multiple victims. It was not a situational case, but the allegations were of many, many victims, where he was obviously using his position in a predatory way, according to the allegations. And I don't have a problem with a person in that situation never being allowed to practice again, mm-hmm. supervisor or not. And in fact, that's the desired outcome as far as what I would be concerned about. My concern is more of like what we talked about earlier, that we don't have our net so broad that we take people who could be where we really have no reason to think that they are that type of predatory type of person.
I think we're talking about two different issues, though. And one is not having the door slammed quite so shut,
right.
and the expansion.
Right.
And I mean, I do wonder why in 5 weeks I haven't heard a peep out of people that I wrote to
mm-hmm.
about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think if there were an objection or a reasonable demand to be heard, we would have heard it. And so that's why I don't have any problem with the expansion, because you know I invited people to come back, give me an objection, ask for something, and their silence speaks volumes.
Well, I think I'm sensing some common ground here. I think that the consensus would be whatever we do should be uniform, but it should be thoughtful. And if it's, and so maybe the bill, as popular as it was, is less ready than you think to be a law in any framework. The boards have had little input, mostly because I think they felt that they don't get in the way of a train. And this is such a touchy, if you listen to the floor debate yesterday about trying to get set aside some disqualification of some people who were totally fine to work. It was an interesting discussion. So people are very nervous about that whole topic. I do know as an idea, having worked the board as much as I have, they chat a lot amongst themselves. They have a council, they meet regularly. And if we charge them as an answer to this challenge, to come back next January or December 15th or something with a proposal to do just what we want, to have the multiple predatory people gone, to have people who were the consensual juvenile types not caught in the same net, even though it's a felony or something. We do believe in rehabilitation in Minnesota, even for some of these folks, which is the scary, touchy part. But I think when the solution that comes out of a board like that would be to have thought through some of those nuances. You may actually get through the board. And so then we would, you know, put these aside and then draft something directing them to come back. And they would do it, and it would be toothy. Yet,
Senator Perry.
Since our floor debate, about the only compromise I could come up with was this supervisional practice, or whatever you would call. But see, our family has been touched by this. And it was in a nursing home with my 82-year-old mother-in-law. So it's really personal. And I would have to agree with you, Senator, that, you know, that person I never, ever want to see in a capacity where they could do that to, a helpless elderly person, let alone a 12, 13, 14-year-old. And I don't know that they can be rehabilitated. I don't know that I've ever been exposed to sure, clean-cut cases. Because when we look at what's happened in the past, sometimes it takes 5, 10, 15, 20 years for some of this to come forth. And so I'm concerned, and I'm trying to keep that emotional side out of how we move forward here a little bit, because it is going to have far-reaching, as Senator Dill would say. I mean, you can't even scoop manure behind a horse walking down the street. I mean, so there is, this felony really does have a wide impact. I don't know how we get to that point.
Representative Leyland, sir.
I think that what Representative Abler is talking about is very wise, because the licensing boards are the ones who are working intimately with these people, and they know the situation, they know the circumstances, they know the, probably, in some cases, they know the person. So casting this wide net from a very high level, us, and saying in all cases, thus and so, is very difficult. And I'm sure that the licensing boards did not reply, because it's like, what are we going to say to this? We can't object to this. This would be politically very wrong for us to object to this. At the same time, there are circumstances. There's always those circumstances. And leaving them some leeway somewhere where they could have that occasional leeway would be a very wise thing, and there's nothing here that allows that. Neither.
Right. You're right. Senator Olson?
Well, I have a suggestion to throw on the table in terms of something that would get at this, but I'm going to make this suggestion, recognizing right away what the problem with it would be. This is a very difficult situation, because no one has a crystal ball, and no one wants to ever be responsible for making a decision that then subsequently leads to anyone else being harmed. And so it's always hard whenever you talk about putting someone in the position of making tough judgment calls. And yet, really, the only way to ever responsibly deal with these kinds of things generally, whether it's, I mean, just in the law generally, is to have someone looking at particular situations and making those judgments. I mean, one suggestion would be for an individual board to be charged with having a general rule that someone's not going to be able to be relicensed, but have a small open door to be able to say that they would look specifically at the nature of the offense and, based on the circumstances of it, whether there was, you know, a likelihood, given the circumstances, you know, of a reoffense, or whether it appeared tied to a particular situation and set of circumstances, and they would look at the person's subsequent conduct, behavior, whatever, and have the latitude to make specific findings that the person they did not feel was a threat for reoffending. Now, I don't know that the boards want that responsibility. I'm only saying that here for not only your reaction, but perhaps for them to think about whether, on the one hand, it would give a little latitude, on the other hand, it would put some responsibility there that they may not want. I don't know.
Thank you, Senator. And Senator Perry, what license did that person hold?
I can't give you the exact, but no. he was like an aide.
Nursing CNA. Certified
nursing. Yep. And so they're not even covered by it.
Right.
They're under DHS, they have background checks. He no longer can do that. And you wouldn't have passed it. You know, this is the challenge of all this whole topic. Is you have people like that who we agree 6-0 that those people should shovel manure. I mean, you know, they shouldn't go anywhere near a person, and they should. But there are the kinds that we talked about, where these age differences, and somebody thought that would be good charge, or felt compelled to do something for the whole politics, you know, some county attorney or whatever. But I know that the boards, I think in the case that made the paper, they were frustrated with what they couldn't do. But there's sometimes I know that there's management that can happen, and the person actually has merit, and the case is less severe. And that's the kind of stuff they figure out. Mm-hmm. And if we charge them with that, they would put their, they couldn't do it in 2 weeks, but in the interim time, they could come up with something pretty impressive.
And Scott, for Dean Case out of Autun, in fact, when he went, we started this practice, there had to be a third party in the room, but he did not have to disclose to his patient his conviction. And I think the boards understand the difference between somebody who has victimized their patients in a professional situation and somebody who had sex with his girlfriend. And I trust them to make that differentiation. And maybe what we should look at is the language the board may not grant and put an unless. But I don't know how you want to craft giving the board that discretion.
Well, what I'd like to suggest at this point, because I think we have some very compelling reason to look at limiting, and it's related to the chiropractor in this incident, the Board of Chiropractic was very clear that they are doctors and want to be held to the same high standard as medical physicians and doctors of osteopathology, and I think actually midwives also come under that board supervision. Perhaps for this year what we could do is limit it to the Board of Chiropractic, because at some point if we do this survey and do some continued work with the boards, their decision is going to affect the Board of Medical Practice anyway. Board of Medical Practice already is out there, has a closed door policy on criminal sex. If we move the chiropractic board, which we dealt with this year, based on the situation this year, into that same category, and say we're going to pull all the boards together to continue to get recommendations on how to deal with the subtle differences, then their recommendations will just be, at that point in the future, retroactive to the Board of Medical Practice and the Board of Chiropractic. Because I do feel like after all the discussion we had this year, we get to the point of giving the authority to the Board of Chiropractic to say, no, we're going to revoke licenses. And then we completely back off of everything and go to a study group, which is what we always do. Now, in this case, I do agree that we need more thoughtful direction from the professions themselves and the boards. So I think we should move ahead with this continued conversation. And at the same time, maybe this year, simply limit it to the Board of Chiropractic as initially proposed, with the understanding that we're going to be continuing this discussion. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if we went that direction, particularly because the chiropractors have actually asked for this, you know, and asked for this regulation. But if we could somehow kind of as a compromise put some language in there that would say that, it would kind of do both. It would say that next year we're going to look at a recommendation from, you know, the boards or, you know, other interested stakeholders with regard to both expanding the reach of the law and perhaps finding, if appropriate, any way of, you know, any areas where we might not want the application to apply. So I don't know how we'd word that, but something that would say, you know, we're going to put this prohibition in place broadly with regard to all the chiropractors only because they've asked for it, mm-hmm. but recognizing that that there are perhaps other people it should apply to, as well as some more complicated issues, we're specifically going to stay as a part of this, that we're going to come back and look at those issues next year so we can address some of the House's concerns about this at the same time.
Yes, but I think that's what I just said. We'll do both.
But I mean, put the language in there to actually just say we're going to do that.
Right. We'll pass. What I was recommending is passing the Senate's version of the chiropractic bill with the date certain, and add an amendment in there that says we're moving forward on the broader analysis.
Madam Chair, the way to get the boards to work is to give them something to look at, like Senator Olson suggests. If you actually combined both bills and did the Cairo one first, which nobody minds that. And then did the second part, effective a year later. Then that would give them a reason to get together. So that way you've done everything you wanted to do. And it would be understood that this would be a dialogue that would be ongoing. They didn't object to the language. And maybe it's been good enough for the Board of Medical Practice all this time. There may be some need to have some work done. And in there we could even appoint, say that they should give a report or something, going to make sure they know they should work on it, to give them the legs. But I think that we've done things in the past, requiring the boards to do things 2 years out. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to do things 2 years out. And so that way we knew that we were going to get their traction on them to do what we wanted to fix it. And they came back with a wonderful solution.
Okay. And what I'd like specifically is for them to recommend a process of review for maybe a timeline for reapplication or for first application. And then a process of review of the circumstances and guidelines for them to follow in looking at the nature of the offense, the nature of the victim and the relationship of the proposed professional to the victim, so that we can catch the kind of folks that Senator Perry is talking about and not my poor client.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and besides Senator Olson, and I'm not sure of the professions of the people at the table here, but we're not lawyers, and I would imagine. Oh, all right, okay. Representative Jackson, and I'm not sure where the Judicial Committee is wanting to go with this whole topic of felony convictions, because it gets back to the conversation we had in the Senate. And the Judicial Committee, said we have 3 pages. Of jobs that you could not do in the state of Minnesota if you had a felony conviction. And we're saying maybe we need to reassess that. And, everybody's a little worried about being accused of being soft on crime, but on the other hand, we have to be thoughtful about the people we want to exclude from professions and not. And we joke about this because we've mentioned a couple times here. On that list, you can't even clean out stalls at Canterbury Downs if you've had a felony conviction. So, seriously.
Yeah.
You can't sell lottery tickets if you've had a felony conviction. Now, these are not sexual felony convictions. They're just felony. So, we have to have some jobs for people out there who have been convicted, done their time, and they're back out now. They're rehabilitated. Mm-hmm. They're ready to start out. And if they can't even scoop poop, where are they going to go? So
well,
the Judicial Committee, I think, has to have a pretty serious discussion about shaking some of those jobs through the filter to decide where we're going.
Because, Madam Chair, I think what we realized is that, again, it's so easy to get caught up in the one scenario that you're trying to prevent, and I'm sure in this situation it was felony conviction related to something to do with gambling,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time you're not thinking through all those other things that your net is broader than you realized when you passed it. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it's probably the same situation here. When we think about someone like Senator Perry described, it's easy to say how we'd want to go, but we're not thinking about these other people in other situations. So,
which gets back to my point that I think we really need to proceed with the chiropractic bill. We've already talked that up one side, down the other, and it's fully vetted, and move forward with some discussion. Now, whether we do it in the same bill or an additional bill, or recommend that there's another bill we create to drop in for next year, where they have to work closely with the Judicial Committee, I'm sure it'll be routed through them anyway, as opposed to just the boards getting together on their own and coming up with their own ideas, which may be out of sync with where traditional chambers want to be going.
May I suggest that rather than being, if we, I find limited to chiropractors, fine, but if we don't have an exit door here, we're going to be forced to change a key
key part of the bill, and that was very difficult, what we went through on the House floor yesterday. And I want, I'd like to get the politics out of that. And so what I'm suggesting is maybe moving the effective date, changing the language to allow the board review, and then letting the board of chiropractors, the licensing board know, and as well as everybody else, you've got a year to come up with a process that's acceptable.
Yeah, the way to handle that, the different bodies are right there. Couldn't figure that out. The way to handle your concern, I think, would be make it effective whenever it August 1st, so it's done the job. Mm-hmm. You can sunset it in a year or two out, so that then it goes away if it's just unworkable. And then to work on that, it's not so touchy because you've already sunset it, knowing it's going to be.
That's a nice idea.
And so that would be a. So I don't know if you want to include the other boards in a similar way, but at least I think this is the bill to get all of it done. If you want to, I don't know what's the pleasure of the Senate. There should be uniform policy across all the boards or something.
Exactly.
I mean, this is the one that made the paper, and I think we have to act on something. And we're happy to clean up our mess. And yeah, this is my view of all this. I think the sunset would give you a break.
So I'm hearing a little more messy what you're suggesting. When I heard you say to go ahead with the chiropractic part, effective August 1st, and put in something that would like be saying this shall apply to all health related licensing board decisions to 1401, as of, and put it a day, a year out, as of August 1st, 2011. And then it's there unless they come and say let's have some modifications.
Representative Lane, that's not what I was intending to say. What I was intending to say was it's just limited to the Board of Chiropractic. And let's go ahead with this process of pulling the licensing boards together to get recommendations from them. Not that we would be applying the same rule that we're talking about today at the Board of Chiropractic to all boards.
Okay, and I think Representative Abrams said if you don't put something there, they don't act.
Well, actually, I think they will. But it just depends how much you trust them. I actually have a high level of confidence. I think that, just to get this resolution, I think if you did the Kylo thing with the effective, whatever you said, and then expire it at June 30th or something next year and direct the board to come back with a plan, it'll be no trouble to do the Kylo thing. If it, nothing happens, it'll fly off the House floor again with maybe go too long. The Senate will think about it and probably pass it. But the, I know my colleagues from my side. But anyway, so it's, but I think that way you get the thoughtful work you want done. Mm-hmm. And the board will then move about it. Maybe their social work board wants to talk about that. But if we turn them loose for 6 months, they will chat amongst their peers and come back with a plan that I think they'll like.
And then I would also like to be part of that process, that of course the professional organizations, not just the boards themselves.
Boy, they would include them.
Is there anyone here who wants to speak to this bill? Yes, sir. And then followed by. Welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you. My name is Court Halton, and I represent the Minnesota Chiropractic Association. I've been sitting there listening to this. It's been a very interesting conversation. It takes me back. I first walked in this building in 1976. I was counsel to the House Judiciary Committee, and I've seen the criminal law cycles come and go, and the cycles within, and it seems to be a never-ending process. In fact, I was reminded back then, we were all young and liberal back then, and we had a law on the books. It may still be on the books, but it was actually illegal to discriminate against a felon who had done his or her time and was now what we used to call when I did criminal law off paper. I don't know if that term exists anymore, but that means that you were done with parole, and I guess we don't have parole anymore either, but we have something like it. When we have never been disciplined on the sex crimes as a legislature. We've never accomplished that. We have policies crisscrossing time periods and sections of the statute, and the arguments are, you get good people arguing on both sides, and you get very complicated, compelling arguments. The arguments that have been brought up here by everybody on the complexities of ramifications of sex crimes, everything that's been said is accurate, and it goes both ways. When we started with this bill, representing the chiropractors, and I don't represent the board, and I think that the practitioner's opinion is more important than the board's opinion in this area, because it's their image that you're dealing with. Most of our men and women were surprised to find out that you could have a crim sex felony conviction and still practice chiropractic. That was kind of an eye-opener. Nobody wants people that have that problem in our profession. It's not my profession. I'm a lawyer, but I've worked for these guys for a long time, and the women that are there. It's something that you don't want you to be looked at that way, especially when you have the trust of a patient and a healer, and especially somebody who touches people as part of the therapy, like doctors do, and PTs and chiropractors and podiatrists. So what we approach this is, the MDs already have a similar provision, and we hold ourselves out to be doctors. So we're not going to fight this. We might want to steer it if there's parts of it that we're not comfortable with. One of the parts we were not comfortable with is being singled out because of a news story. Every city, every town, every group, every profession, every company, has cross sections of people that have a variety of problems, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or whether somebody commits a sex crime. So there's no basis for treating the chiropractors on a policymaking basis any differently than any of the other people who are in the healing business. Now, I also represent those guys who shovel that substance on the backside of the racetrack. And their law is any felony, until we changed it last year or the year before, any felony, don't bother to apply for a license. And if you have a license, it's gone. Now, that's for, watering horses and changing bedding and all that sort of stuff. When we changed it to 10 years, unless you had to register as a sex offender. And that came from the women that work on the backside, of which there are many. And everybody was fine because, we don't need to go down that road. That's not relevant to what we're talking about here. The problem with the sex crimes that you're having in terms of this out that you're talking about, over the many years that I've been involved in this, and I was a criminal defense attorney until I burned out, there's basically, I think, a division there that's quantifiable, and that is the person who exercises his or her will over another person for sexual purposes. That is a type of offender. There are these other people who have committed an offense because we've written a statute that made it an offense. And one of them is the age difference. And the hardest one, which I don't know how you would ever get at, is this two people greatly affected by drugs or alcohol on an evening, and neither one of them really has solid memory of what went on. Good luck with that. I see one, I make one suggestion here, and that is, I think the board's meeting, that could be a real, whenever you have separate groups, just by the fact that they're separate, you get constituencies, and you can get arguments over things that are not even particularly relevant to your objective. But what if they did, what if they said, we don't want this statute? Why should you listen to that? This should be your decision. And I'll leave you with a proposal, and that is that you can define, you can pick out actually probably the statute numbers on when a person has forced his will on another person for this purpose. And if any of the sex felonies are with a patient, or any of these ones that you will delineate are with anybody, that person's license is gone if they have one. It cannot be renewed. If they don't have one, but they were, you know, in the process of getting one, they can't get one for, let's say, a period of 10 years. After that time, there is a rebuttable presumption created that the person is not licensable. But if the boards want to come up with criteria which the applicant could show that could overcome that rebuttable presumption, then the board can license them. But the board would have to come up with that criteria. And if there's a consequence if they don't, and that means their authority to relicense does not exist. That'll get your boards working if they want to. Now they may say, especially in the cases where it is a case of forcing one's will on another, because I can tell you that the recidivism rates amongst that group approaches 100%. And then we wouldn't, you know, there's a, but if you don't put the out in when you pass this statute, you're not going to get it in later on. Believe me, there was a conversation that you did not have on the Senate floor that under different circumstances you could have had, and that conversation would have been a lot hotter than the one that you had. And if you come back with this bill saying, oh, now we're carving an out provision, you'll have that conversation, and you will not get the votes to pass it. Thank you.
It was Mr. Holton. Oh, I'm sorry, your last name?
Holten.
Okay, thank you very much. Anyone have questions for Mr. Holton? Senator Wilson?
I do think Mr. Holton makes some wise observations, and with respect to what he said about it's really hard if we think there's a reason to have an open door to, just because of the politics involved in this, to ever go in that direction later, it would be difficult. And I like what he said about whatever the language would be, if someone is doing this in the course of their occupation, then I think no matter what the circumstances are, there should never be an opportunity to come back and do it again. In other situations, there may be some levels that would be easy to define that we'd put in the same category, and perhaps for the lower kinds of offenses, then it would make sense to give the boards the latitude if they choose to come up with these criteria, and if they don't, then the prohibition would just be there. I mean, that does seem to make some sense to me.
Let's talk about process a little bit more here rather than the particular levels that another group may wrestle with. Senator Jackson.
I was just going to make one quick point, and then we can go on process, and I think it would be clean and relatively easy to look at crim sex statutes and pull out the exact section we're looking for, because they do differentiate, and the ones that are just based on age difference, whole different category. And we can also give some specificity to having victimized a patient. But do you mean process?
by...
Rather than coming up with the answers right now about beyond the Board of Chiropractic, how, I'd like to talk about how we're going to deal with getting to the answers, and who's going to be involved and what sort of timeline we're going to do that. Write that into the bill rather than what the specific levels are that we're recommending. Let them deal with that later, is what I'm saying. Representatives are...
That's okay. I know what you meant. Well, Madam Chair, I guess my thought is that then there's probably two ways to approach this. One would be, since we're all agreeing about the chiropractors, you know, and an effective date and kind of going with that to get something accomplished, we could either, but wanting to do something now because we see this broader issue that may be difficult to deal with later and wanting to make sure that the House accepts the bill, we could either just give the chairs, our chairs, the opportunity to see if you could work out some language and then come back quickly, you know, show it to us. Mm-hmm. Or we could go with that delayed effective date for the rest of it, knowing that we're going to try to address these issues, you know, or something like that. But I think that, so the question is, do we really want to try to get this solved now, giving you that latitude? To me, that's the question. Or do we want to just sort of put something in that signals an intent without really dealing with it this year?
My concern, however, is that if we close the door to the possibility of differentiating, it's going to be hard or impossible to reopen. And that's why I'm a little worried, especially after what happened in the House floor yesterday. You know, where we're talking about 16-year-old kid who, you know, steals an expensive something who was suddenly the right level and can't get a job doing anything. How difficult it was. It was unbelievable. Passed by a single. And so I think it would be unwise to not have an exit door built in.
Well, ma'am.
Oh, sorry. Representative Jackson, we're still going to have to deal with the Board of Medical Practice in the same way, because they have a closed door right now. Right? So if we want to come back with some recommendations at a future point, we're still going to have that argument with the Board of Medical Practice.
Right, but that door's closed. This one's not. And I don't want to close another door, because that's going to be enough on its own. I would just like this to be open enough to, and I don't think it would be that tough to further define the felony level sexual conduct in the statute so that our net is not too broad.
And before we go on, I think there's some more people to testify. Welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chairs and members of the committee. I came to introduce myself. My name is Kate Zacher-Pate, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Social Work. And I came here this morning primarily just to listen and sort of see what the discussion was about. But I do feel compelled to offer a few comments. And one is that... Representative Jackson, you mentioned that you sent out formal letters to the boards, and I truly do not recall receiving one of those in terms of registering a formal response and position to this particular bill, and I don't recall discussion amongst the executive directors, so I just wanted to indicate that and certainly would be happy to follow up with you. Secondly, there has been informal discussion amongst the executive directors, and we surely have been monitoring this, you know, primarily knowing that it began with the chiropractic board because of the pretty dramatic story that hit the paper. In terms of criminal sexual offenses for all of the licensees that we license collectively, it really is pretty rare. And in saying that, I certainly don't mean to dismiss that whatsoever, because it's probably the most egregious violation in all of our standards. At this point in time, when an alleged complaint comes in regarding any sexual contact with any of our clients, those must immediately be referred to the Attorney General's office. And so we are working hand in hand very, very closely with the Attorney General's office and our compliance panels. So just know that that does occur, and that is required by law. Secondly, we will typically wait in a situation to see if there is, in fact, a criminal conviction or what the outcome is in the legal system before then that comes back to the board's compliance panels or complaint review committees to determine what resolution there should be in terms of this individual's professional license. In looking at that, you know, what we need to look at, because the only board that is exempted, the only health-related licensing board that is exempted at this point, is Board of Medical Practice, and exempted from the Criminal Rehabilitation Act. We must, you know, still continue to look at all of the factors that are involved in that particular sort of complaint, all the allegations, criminal convictions, etc. So we must weigh that with, you know, the most important thing for us clearly is to enforce public protection. You know, that individual's fitness to practice is absolutely key to us. So we are doing that, and we are looking at and considering all of the kinds of issues that you have talked about this morning. You know, the relationship between the two individuals, et cetera, et cetera. So we are looking at that. I guess the last couple of comments that I might make, informally, the boards and executive directors have had some discussions, and I think that it is fair to say that there is some consensus that whatever the standard be regarding criminal sexual conduct felonies, that it would be applied in a uniform manner, you know, so that it wouldn't just be the practitioners who are involved in physical kinds of care with clients, you know, but also certainly our mental health professions who are in a position of power and are working with oftentimes extremely vulnerable kinds of clients. And so I think that it is fair to say, short of a, you know, a formal official position, that the executive directors would be in favor of a consistent application of this, and that that would be a public policy that would best serve public protection. The executive directors and the boards do have an executive director forum. We have a policy committee. We work very well and very collaboratively together, and we would be happy to assist the legislature in any way, you know, that you would seem appropriate. If you would like us to further consider this or come back to you, provide some input, provide you with positions, et cetera, we would be happy to cooperate, you know, however best we could to provide some of that technical expertise. So the discussion this morning has been very thoughtful.
Thank you, Ms. Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry that you addressed this. I had a group of young people I had to step out and greet, but from my district. But my question, if you didn't address it, mm-hmm. is whether you feel the boards would want the responsibility for having any flexibility in making decisions and findings about licensing, if that would be something you would be amenable to considering, or whether you think the boards would really rather not and have a more of a black and white, if you violate this statute, you're prohibited, and, you know, that type of very, very much more directive decision-making by the legislature.
Mm-hmm. That's a very difficult question to answer, you know, and just sort of being here as one executive director this morning, I would really hesitate to speak for the group, you know, to that very specific question. But what I can tell you about that is that at this point in time, because the only board exempted from considering the Criminal Rehabilitation Act is the Board of Medical Practice, at this point in time, all of the other boards, we must apply our process and the standards, and we must consider a person's fitness to practice, essentially. I mean, we're, at this point in time, we don't have that, I don't know if I want to call it a luxury, but we're not able to apply a black and white standard. You know, I think the issues that you raised in terms of how far that net should go is very real and very valid. If there is a, regardless of the standard, the black and white, or sort of assess each case on its own, there are certainly benefits and consequences for either of those approaches. And that's not a direct answer to your question, but I'm hesitating to do that.
Representative Lane.
A few questions. The first one, are there chiropractors, do they now go to the Attorney General, the practice you designed?
I would expect so. I believe that all the health-related licensing boards are required to report those alleged complaints to the Attorney General's office.
And when you're saying we were looking at this and that, are you speaking of several boards?
Executive directors from several boards, yes. I am not certain, though, that any particular board has taken a formal position on that.
Are you then working with what we would call boards listed in Section 214.01, Subdivision 2? Are those all the boards that you're talking about?
Yes, indeed, the health-related licensing boards.
So then as you've been having this discussion around this, has it led you anywhere? Have you, would you be... Right. You basically said you'd be willing to assist in this, but have you come to something where you said, we need the legislature to help us formulate the present bill?
I guess the response I would give to that is that the one piece of information that the executive directors have come to is that there is some consensus that the standard should apply to all the health-related licensing boards rather than identifying one and or two and or three, that there would really be, a greater public protection policy served by having a consistent standard. And beyond that, I'm not sure that I want to speak for the boards in terms of which way they would like to see the legislature go with this. I mean, we are certainly happy to implement, you know, what the legislature would decide, and happy to provide more formal input if asked.
Thanks. One thing, what drove this bill, I think, in particular, was the fact that the Cairo board couldn't pull the license of this individual. Is that how you read the law, too? If you do all the rehab and all the things, but at the end of the day, you can't. They can be in jail for however long, and they keep paying their dues and going to class. How do you do that? You can't take their license away.
With that, Representative Abler, I think depending on the nature of the crime and the conviction, et cetera, but again, even with that, the idea is the extent of rehabilitation that has been demonstrated, and also at this point in time, for example, if there is an agreed stipulation and order between the board and the licensee to, for example, suspend or revoke a license, you know, oftentimes there are those conditions put in place, and when you satisfactorily complete X, Y, and Z, to the satisfaction of the board, then I think that the board is pretty compelled to then to give the license back, essentially, if the conditions are met.
Senator Perry.
Well, I'm hearing the rehabilitation seems to be an issue, but when I'm listening here, all of a sudden it appears that we have three different paths that we've been talking about. We have the judicial review of felons that needs to take place, and I think it was Mr. Holton that said workplace or occupational violations, which we're really working on. But then I think of Senator Dill's debate on the floor. We're looking at a youth issue that is not related to a workplace or occupational violation. And I'm just trying to think of a way that he would be at ease if there was some way to focus in on just the workplace and the occupational violation alone on this issue, fully knowing that the judicial is going to have to take a look at what felons can and can't do in the categories, I believe.
Yeah, and I think these are some of the things that we can struggle with in this work group or whoever we determine is going to deal with those things. Because you're right, I think we all here want to deal with workplace issues, and yet if there were a chiropractor who was a neighborhood pedophile, had nothing to do with his workplace, we'd want to make sure that person was targeted as well. And in terms of today, I'm just going to throw this out there, I'm aware of time. I wonder if on this point, because we have the three points, the scope of the bill, the pleas of conviction, and the dates of enactment, if it's okay with the conference committee that Representative Philip Jackson and I perhaps work on some language on this piece with the councils and then pull the committee together again for a review. And if that's okay, and I think we could probably continue to talk about this for another hour, but I'm going to ask maybe unless there's something people feel they need to say to this point, then we just move to the last one about the plea of guilty, wrap that up, and then we'll go and do a little bit more work and then reconvene. Does that sound okay? Senator Olson, you looked like you had something to say.
No, Madam Chair, I think that's a good idea. Just having heard the testimony from the two witnesses, I'm inclined to agree and think that treating everyone with one standard makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that if it's possible this year to come up with something satisfactory to say we're going to encompass all workplace and in certain black and white sections of law that would be these without a lot of struggle, that'd be the direction I'd like to see us go to try to define that. And if we've messed it up, you know, as Vice Chair of Judiciary, I'm sure the boards would be back and we could look at this again next mm-hmm. year. But then in terms of the plea or guilty thing or not, as long as we are making this more narrow as far as the not including some of these sentences, if you can reach that language, I'm thinking that some of the objection to that will go away because then we won't have those people caught, those people we're not really trying to get at. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me that you're going to have someone treated differently based on whether they plead guilty or not,
right.
Which is then almost a constitutional issue because someone has a right to a trial. And if we're putting that much at stake in terms of their ability to practice their profession based on whether they plead guilty or not, we might even tread a little close to that line.
Maybe to the whole, all the points. So just move along here.
Mm-hmm.
What was your line here? I think you're on the right track. And having been one of those who's been trying to free up some people who were caught in 2005 in that, who were totally wrongly caught up in that net, who were now unable to work, I think we're in a position to write a very thoughtful piece of legislation that will do no harm, but will capture the ones that we're trying to get out. And I think that the idea about different, you'll come up with something about, there are some people that predatory in their position, and they never, those are the ones that we all mm-hmm. have no time for, but the statutory kind of things, we have some sympathy for those. And if you, I think that's not the word that you'll come up with and chat about next time. But if you include all the groups, which I think makes some sense, and we've been testimony, it seems to support that. If you do put a sunset one or two years out. Then you don't trap yourself into trying to change a bill that's unchangeable. And that way, the fuse runs off and the bill gets put up. And so that's another encouragement.
Okay. I heard you say include all, define this particular statutes that are appropriate. And then I'm thinking of what Mr. Moulton said about a rebuttable presumption regarding never. Mm-hmm. I put that in there.
Okay, and the council have all those kinds of notes and help us work up some language.
This has been very helpful.
Okay, so then the plea of guilty piece kind of goes away depending on how we frame this language. Is that what you're saying? To the legal eagles in the room? Okay. All right. So this has been great. I appreciate everybody's participation here. Representative Kulik Jackson and I will work with council on this piece, and then we'll try to move this along quickly so we can get back onto the floors. Anything else? Senator Perry? Senator Olson? Representative Kulik Jackson? Representative Lane? All right, thank you. We'll adjourn. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I left it.